just so that I start recording for the podcast. But we're admiring Steve's shirt right now, which is, show us your shirt, Steve.
Trying to do this cogently over here. Every Bears starting quarterback from, I think, since like 93, 94, somewhere around there.
So, like, we're going back to, like, what was the last decent quarterback on there? Kramer, probably? Is Kramer on there, or is that?
Well, define decent. I would say Cutler was decent. I would say Cutler.
Cutler, I think, has all the records right now, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, which ain't saying much. But, yeah, there's – I mean, it goes all the way back. I mean, like, obviously, a lot of these guys, you know, Marino and Craig and Kramer and McNown and McCown. I love how there's two two McCowns and McNowns to differentiate from on this list. Yeah, it's got everybody. Mike Glennon, Chase Daniel. It's got got all the lowlights on this shirt.
I mean, if you got Moses Moreno on there, I mean, there you go. Yep. That's all you need right there. So
it's got Todd Collins. Who could forget Todd Collins?
I have not. I go back further than that. So I yes. Well, it's been a lot of misery for the last close to 40 years now. So
this one's still pretty dated though, because Andy Dalton's not on here, Fields isn't on here, obviously, and then Nathan Peterman would actually be on here as well too, because he started the last game of the season last year.
Well, we're hoping that Fields is a reason to forget this list, right? I mean, the book still isn't out on Fields, I think. I mean, they've given him a lot of tools here in the draft this year and free agency. So if he fails this year, I think they're going to – then his name actually goes on that shirt and you have to replace it.
So, yeah, yeah, this is really the year. This is really the year where at the end of the year, you really need to make the decision of whether or not you're going to extend him or not. And they've set him up, I think, fairly well. I don't know if the team as a whole is going to be good, but I think he's put in finally, after two miserable years, he's put in a decent position to succeed. And the division is fairly open too, all things considered.
Well, yeah, I mean, when the best quarterback in the division is, oh, God, it could be actually be Justin Fields. I mean,
no, I mean, I would probably say, it's really Kirk or it's really Cousins or Goff. I mean, Goff's been to a Super Bowl. Say what you want about Cousins, but Cousins is never hurt, always plays. He's always
just don't put him on prime time. Just don't
exactly.
Put him on prime time. So
exactly, you know, and then Jordan Love is the biggest wild card, you know, there is. Nobody knows.
He's going to end up being the best quarterback in the division just because that's how things work in this division. It doesn't matter who plays for Green Bay. It could literally be a piece of monster and they'd still throw for six touchdowns against the Bears in one game. So,
well, to put to bed this, the only thing I'm rooting for right now is I don't want Green Bay to be the worst team in the league, because I don't want them to luck into like a generational quarterback like Caleb Williams or like Drake May, I think, out of UNC. So they can't be god awful. They need to be like a 5 to 7-ish win team this year. So they can pick another linebacker at 10.
That would be ideal. I like that thinking. So
you can't let them bottom out. Now, if the Jets bottom out, I don't care. The Jets can bottom out. That would be biblical. But the Packers have to stay mediocre.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, right now, I mean, except for New York Jets fans, I think everybody is rooting for anyone else in that division except the Jets, right? I mean, I've always, like, you know, had a kind of a kindred spirit for the Jets just because they've gone through a lot of suffering like Bears fans have.
Same.
You know, it just same thing with Buffalo, but you know, you're like anybody but the Patriots at this point. But yeah, I don't know. Screw Aaron Rodgers. That guy's an ass. I don't want him to do good at all. So.
Hey, that's a good place to transition into what we got to go into next. It's Guys Not on the Radio. You're tuning in on Facebook Live, also on all your favorite podcasting devices. Our special guest tonight, Steve Stove Pulaski, who we will talk about his blog podcast. And live videos they does on YouTube called Sleepless with Steve. So if you want to check that out, and then also his time. Hey, this is great. We've got a connection from North Central College, Wonk alum. And I know we're not supposed to call it Wonk. Mad Dog will kill us all. from retirement, and also his time at Studstill Media. Now he finds himself in Dubuque, Iowa. We're so excited to have him tonight. We're going to go ahead and get this thing started. It's the Guys Not on the Radio podcast.
Make this priority.
And now it's time for Guys Not on the Radio with Shap.
He's a party on skates.
And JC.
The little girly man.
If you stuck a lump of coal up his ass, in 2 weeks you'd have a diamond.
And JC.
They think he's a righteous dude.
Is this it? I mean, is this two bowls of M&Ms and some balloons? You know what, Phyllis? I think you need to step it up. Because if I'm not mistaken, we gave you your wedding shower here. We all came into this room and gave you a golden shower.
That's disgusting.
You are fake news.
You're killing me, Smalls.
It's Shap and JC and the Guys Not on the Radio podcast.
Well, that sets up. I'm going to see a man about a wallaby.
All right, welcome in. Thank you, Steve, for taking the time to talk with us tonight. And it's wild because you, how long were you in the Illinois Valley for?
I was in the Illinois Valley from 2018, July 2018 to February of 2022. So just under 4 years.
And we, it's hilarious. We never actually met while you were here.
No. So, no, and no. I think that that's like the North Central College, like perfect radio school program right there. Like if you go to NCC and you go to Wonk, you finish there and then you get in radio, you come out to Studstill Media and you have a 4 year max deal. And then it's after 4 years, you're like, all right, I've maxed out as much money as I can make here. I'm gone. Or you get fired if you're me. So, hey, you know, either one. So.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty funny how that worked out. I know I've talked to you in the past, or JC. I remember you messaged me. I don't even remember actually when it was, but asking me if I'd like to DJ weddings, and I'm like maybe in the future, but not at this point in time. But that was like I think the most conversation we really had up until last week when I caught you guys live on the show.
Yeah, and then just kind of followed you. I've been reading your blog, and I have to admit, like there are a few movies. Like one of the movies that you reviewed on your blog, I saw you post it and it caught my attention and I was so curious about it, I had to watch it. And that was The Yule Log from Adult Swim. And I hadn't heard anything about it until you posted about it. And I told everybody I knew after that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Credit to my girlfriend, Catherine, because she's the one who put that one on my radar even before I've seen it. And like, and I'm sure you guys at least seen or heard of Too Many Cooks, the same director who made that popular Adult Swim short film. Yeah, she put that one on my radar around Christmas time, and it was exactly up my alley, that kind of absurdist humor. And I just love the fact how it wasn't promoted, it wasn't marketed. You had to kind of stumble upon it. And I think that's what made it the best part of all.
And it was, I mean, if you were just putting it on as a Yule log for Christmas and thinking, oh, it's just a Yule log, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're trapped into a one camera like murder mystery, like crazy horror flick. It was just insane. And I never made it all the way through it.
Did you really not finish it?
I didn't finish it. I made it like an hour and a half, maybe an hour in, and I'm like, I just can't do it anymore.
Real quick. It tests your patience, yeah. But it's good. I liked it.
Can you guys hear my cat in the background? Can you hear that, or is it not being picked up on the mic?
No, you're good.
Okay, because I have a very needy cat who, because I'm the only one home and she doesn't have any attention, she's sitting there crying on the top of the steps right outside my office where I record podcasts from. Yes, now she's in here. I'm waiting for her to eventually, this is her perch. I'm waiting for her to get up there and she'll shut up. But so until then, if you hear an annoying cat cry, my apologies. So there she goes.
So Steve, you grew up in Westmont?
I did, yes, Westmont, Illinois.
So how'd you end up in North Central?
Oh man, well, I was pretty much too scared to leave home. That's kind of how my story goes. Quite honestly, like, you know, I looked really on a small scale for colleges, mainly because of the fact that I wanted I didn't want to be in a big lecture hall environment for my learning. I knew that that wasn't going to be conducive to my style of learning. I always knew from early high school I wanted to study writing, so I actually studied English writing at North Central. So I only applied to about 4 colleges. I got accepted to all of them, and then North Central was my number one choice, and they offered a straight B student quite a bit of money, and that made the decision pretty cut and dry, and it was a straight shot for me from where I live as well, so I commuted all 4 years too.
Oh, awesome. And then you did WONC. Did you have any idea that an English person would end up following that as a path of a career?
I've always loved radio. I grew up and again, reminder, I'm young, but I mean, like, I grew up. What really got me into radio, before I went back and dug in the archives of like the Larry Lou Jacks and everything and the Wolfman Jacks and everything like that and WLS, really the foundationally for me, I would say early on in my life, like it was Drex in the Morning on 103.5 KISS FM. It was Eddie and Jobo. And it was Man Cow's Morning Madhouse on Q101. So, like, growing up in Chicago was the hotbed of, like, all of that stuff. And I loved it. I loved kind of, like, the early 2000s almost anarchy of it all. And I knew about WONC, but I didn't really have the gall to go and pursue it until my junior year. And I can talk briefly. I got a brief anecdote about that, about actually what motivated me to finally do radio.
What was
Go ahead,
it?
Tell us.
Yeah,
it was two confluences of events. The one was my buddy, who's now my co-host on Sleepless with Steve Dominic, telling me I have a great radio voice and I sound like the epitome of Chicago, so I should absolutely get behind a microphone. There was that, and it was actually, you guys know, I'm sure you guys are familiar. Obviously, you know Line and Kugel Beer, right?
Sure.
It was John Leinenkugel, one of the founding brothers one of the brothers who runs the brewery. I was at a Kane County Cougars game, a baseball game, and they have their own Leinenkugel sponsored deck. And John was there. And at the time, he was the only of the three brothers I hadn't met. There's Dick, Jake, and John. And John was the only one I hadn't met. And John is like this big, at the time he was this big, burly, Chris Farley kind of character, which was really inspiring. And he told, when I was talking to him, and he signed a box for me or whatever, we were talking and stuff, he just goes, man, you got a great radio voice. You need to do something with that. That Midwestern representation. You just ooze it, man. And I shit you both not. It was at that ball game. My buddy and I, we had seats on the line at Kugel Deck. It was the summer between my sophomore and junior year at North Central. I signed up for WONC at that game.
That's wow. Awesome.
So great then story. You spent your Monday afternoons in Goldspawn.
That I did. And then they moved us to that was the first year in Goldspawn. And then my senior year, that's when they erected that gigantic science center right in the middle of campus. And then they moved the WONC meetings to the science center.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. So
I thought they were still in Goldspawn.
Upgraded.
No, they've been in since 2017-18. They were they moved into the science center, the first floor of the science center. That's where the meetings were when I graduated. I don't know where they're at now, but
it's wild. We'll have to ask Zach if he's watching. Shout out to Zach DeWitch, the fellow who runs the GM, I guess that's what, you know, the broadcast professor at North Central College, who actually, and I thought you were from Zach's group, but you were actually the last Mad Dog class, right?
Yes. Like I said, I started my junior year of WONC, my junior year of college, and both years I worked under John Madormo. And Madormo's my senior year was also Madormo's final year as GM.
Gotcha.
So you.
So do you have any shenanigans to tell about the second floor of the ONC building of the house?
It's a basement. Isn't the shenanigans happen in the basement? At least that's where when we were there.
It's the basement where stuff goes down. You know,
I don't know about you guys. I had shenanigans in both. So hey.
We had to break it in, Shap. We were the
What's
first.
That?
We were the first class on Chicago Avenue, because our freshman year we were in Old Main.
Old Main, yeah.
And
yeah.
And so we broke in Chicago House. It didn't get named Oliver Hall till we had left. I thought, right?
Maybe the very last year.
Yeah, I think maybe senior year they named it Oliver Hall. But yeah, we had to completely break in the station for you.
You're welcome.
No real wild shenanigans for me. I mean, honestly, the thing I love about radio stations is, you know, like now that I've technically, I mean, I don't know if you count WONC, but I've worked for two now. I've worked for Studstill Media, and I presently work for Town Square Media in Dubuque. And I think the thing that I love the most about radio stations is they can just kind of be social gatherings too, even for off hours. I think you guys can even attest to. You guys were in the profession longer than me. You have those sort of therapy sessions, you know, when the mics are off, the pods are down, and the music's just playing, or you're talking in the newsroom or something like that. Like that's the thing when I think back at like WONC is just the camaraderie, and especially the late nights, like being there, like after Sleepless with Steve was done on WONC. Like I did the show before it was a podcast. I did the show on WONC from 12 to 3 in the morning. And then I'd often stay till about 4 o'clock in the morning talking with the next DJ, knowing full well I had to be back at class at 8:20 that following or that later that morning.
So when you were there, they still had jocks on overnight?
Yeah, they did. They did all through my time. Yeah, they needed somebody to cover 12 through 3 a.m. and 3 to 6 a.m. And wow. I remember the first day of every term, or the first day of every term at North Central, your ass could not leave that meeting room until every shift was filled. And it was radio silent, no pun intended, because usually it was the 3 to 6s all in a row that still needed to be covered.
We had a buddy when they first started, because 24 hours happened while we were there, too. So we had a couple of big things that happened in the late 90s, which was flipping it to a 24-hour, because when we first started, we were powering it on at 6 a.m. And powering it off at 2 with the after-hour show. And then Joe Dennis, who was the program director, I think our sophomore year, right, Shep? He flipped it to 24 hours. And then I remember there was Adam Carlson, who's a few years behind us, his freshman year, he took every single 2 to 6 shift across the board.
And so it was 2 to 6 back then,
it was
huh?
2 to 6 because we had midnight to 2 a.m. was called after hours. And it was like cutting edge alternative music. And then a couple nights a week we had All Ages, which All Ages was, I think, midnight to 4. And then we had Midnight Metal Madness. On Saturday. Was it Fridays or Saturdays?
All Ages Metal Madness was for sure Saturdays, but I want to say they expanded that to more than one day.
Yeah, I think Metal Madness was Saturdays and Sunday nights. So yeah. I don't think any of those shows exist anymore. I am shocked Local Chaos made it 25 years, but that the All Ages show, which was amazing, that was like breaking punk. We had Alkaline Trio in the studio with us, which was incredible. But yeah, I was kind of curious how that went. But yeah, 3 to 6, huh? I think because aren't they doing like voice tracking, but like everything's essentially digital, like RCS and the rest, like Real World, where they can either voice track or do it live. But it's all like none of those. Because did you have mini discs or carts or CDs?
No, we had Audio Vault. We had Audio Vault. But the catch was, though, and I can only speak for me, yeah. I've seen the updated console and the updated Studio A now at WONC. I've seen photos. I haven't been there in person yet. But I know, like, when I was there, it was Audio Vault. And how they kept you on your toes was that you only had – it was like, if you remember Audio Vault, you click go to live, and then you would only, if you were trying to go away from automation, if you had to do like a broadcast a game or a football game or something, you'd go to live. So then you had to manually load the tracks or load the files or whatever in. That's how they had you do it. You only had 3 tracks. So it was enough for song sweeper song, song PSA song or something like that. So you could never... You know, you couldn't leave it unattended for very long because you had to load the next element. And if you didn't load the next element in time, it would be dead air.
Wow. So they made you do work instead of...
It was actually a very crafty way. And then I'm not going to lie. When I first started at Studstill Media, because keep in mind, my knowledge mm-hmm. of Audio Vault was very limited at WONC because it was really just about looking through the catalog, following the playlist, dragging what needed to be played, PSA, sweepers, songs, whatever. Imagine my surprise that I remember my first day of Studstill Media, and I'm just like, holy shit, you got the whole day right here. You got everything's loaded, and it just goes. Like, I can go take a piss and not worry about having dead air. I don't have to put on Inagata DeVita, go have a cigarette. Like,
yeah. Weakapog groove, so, fish.
Yeah. I remember filling out the clipboard at the end of the night, like when you were power down the station.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were supposed to. We didn't you have to do it like once a shift?
Yeah, we had to take readings.
Transmitter reading once a shift.
Yep.
But then when you were at the end of the night, you had to actually go and like shut the station off. And I remember having to do that back in the old days when we did the Looney Bin, which was the precursor to
chaos,
to the local chaos of shutting off the transmitter for ONC.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Did you guys have Vintage Rock from 10 to midnight?
Yeah.
That I goes much.
I think Vintage Rock goes back to the 80s with WONC. So I'm glad that, I mean, some of those elements are still there. We, one of the big things was the block specialty programming from 8 to 10. That was kind of new. And then the Sunday specialty shows. But I know From the Upper Deck and Chaos are still on Sundays. I don't know if Mission Rock is still on and some of those other ones, but it's kind of fun to go back and look and see. I know that was one of the, I talked about it last week. That was one of the big things that like blew my mind was talking to Austin Paulson there, who runs the Chaos show, is that, you know, bands aren't giving him CDs anymore. You know, he's right. doing the research to find the music to play on the show because radio has just completely changed the game. I mean, what it is, what it was when we started to what it is today is completely, completely different. You probably, you know, recognize that, you know, just in your own show today. But I'm curious, your Studstill stuff. So you ended up at Studstill Media. I'm hoping that us other North Central grads didn't like cause any issues for you, because at one point they were calling us WONC West, because when we all came out here in the late 90s, early 2000s, we had Ray, we had Maggie, we had Greg, who else? Brad Peterson, Shap, myself. Like there were at least six or seven of us all at once that came and infiltrated Studstill Media.
We must have done something right for them to still like take another chance.
They took another chance on Steve. They're like, all right.
So,
well, I have to say this though, and I shared this when the news came out that Shaw Local acquired Studstill a few months ago. I shared this note, and I don't think I'd ever mentioned it publicly. I know I mentioned it on air during my last shift on Walls 102, but I applied for 76 jobs my senior year of college, and I started like at the beginning of my final trimester in North Central, and I did like anywhere from like 5 to 10 applications a week, and Studstill Media was not only the only place to hire to offer me a job, they were the only place to interview me of 76 job applications, and I have the Excel spreadsheet to prove that. and I remember the interview very well because again, like I'll tell you too, I'll be honest. When I found WGLC first, and my dad and I, when we would take road trips or so for what he does for a living and whatnot, we would have to make some deliveries out to Waterman, Illinois. Now in Waterman, Illinois, you can get like WGLC, you can pick it up. And I remember going on a trip one time with him to drop up some stuff. And he was like, you got to listen to this country station I found. He's like, this is really good because I love classic country. And I was probably about a junior at the time in college. And I just made a mental note of it, 100.1 WGLC. And I think I even wrote it down in like my notepad or something, like places to look into. And I got the interview, and I'll be honest, when I got the interview, I had to Google Maps Peru and everything. I didn't think there was anything west of Morris in Illinois, truth be told. But I drove out there, and I remember Cole, even saying, too, when I was telling him about WONC, he just goes, oh, yeah, I know how good you guys are. I know that. I'm like, all right. So I must have said the right words, because I got a call back in about a week and a half or so, and then that's where I ended up.
Nice. So you like classic country. Do you care for modern country? What's your opinion on that? Without getting into too much trouble, because you work in country right now, right? Country music?
I actually do not. I work, I'm the morning show host of Y105 in Dubuque, and that's a CHR station.
Oh, nice.
And so I did make the format leap over there. I host a Saturday morning show on the country station out here, WJOD. Mm-hmm. But I did afternoons and then eventually mornings on Walls 102 during my time at Studstill. I will say this when it comes to modern country. Modern country is in a lot better of a space it is now than it was when I started at Walls 102. It has come, I say quite a ways. I really like a lot of what is on the radio right now. I truly do. I think there's a lot of dynamic voices right now in country that are prioritizing, I think, more traditional instrumentation and sounds. I think you have Luke Combs, you have Lainey Wilson, you have John Party. You have this really nice sort of mix of artists that offer, that are kind of taking it back. Like the bro country era has really, I think, laid dormant for the most part since about 2019 for really good reason. And I mean, again, too, like I love independent country music too. I mean, I love, like, you know, Sturgill Simpson, Gabe Lee. There's a lot of artists that I like from that scene.
We were talking last week about how, you know, like if you're looking more for true country, you're looking more for Americana now, or alternative country, if you will, just because of what modern country had kind of become. So,
well, and I mean, but, yeah, I think that the Dan and Shays and stuff of the world, I mean, that's easily crossover to like the CHR stuff, because if you listen to it, you could have Justin Bieber sing a Dan and Shay song and it wouldn't faze you.
Here's my favorite point to make on that subject, yeah, actually. And I could talk forever about like the bastardization of modern country music and whatnot. But I'll say this, though. This is the funny thing to me. And this started happening, I want to say, about 10 years ago. If you think about where pop music's at right now, and now that I'm full time on a CHR station for the most part, I see it now. CHR now is so trap and EDM dominant. And I love hip hop. I'm also a big hip hop fan. So I'm not critiquing this, it's just more of an observation. But pop now and CHR, the music that is commonly played on CHR stations, is very techno EDM influenced, trap influenced. And you look at what's on modern country radio, Dan and Shay, Lady A, the band Perry, back when they were a thing, they just recently disbanded. Those groups, I feel like, would have been on CHR stations in the 90s because they had this soft, folksy, like it was more common in that sort of soundscape of CHR at the time. But now what you have is the center has shifted so dramatically with pop that it's gone to sound like hip hop and EDM that like Lady A, Dan and Shay, even Kane Brown are like too soft almost for that sort of realm. And then they're like, let's go to, like, it's country's easier to make it in versus globally popular CHR.
I watched Nico Moon's set on Stagecoach this weekend on Amazon. And it was like him and one other guy, two other people on the stage. And the guitarist was like putting in like trap beats and stuff behind everything, including when he covered Travis Tritt's it's a great day to be alive. I'm like, is there a drum track or something happening? Nico Moon, like, same thing. Hardy, I think a lot of these new guys, they all have that a little bit of that edge. I don't even know how to describe it, but it does have that, like, that pop element to it. That's,
do they sell Bud
so
Light
different
at Stagecoach? I'm just curious.
They what?
Do they sell Bud Light at Stagecoach?
Yeah, I'm
just
sure
curious.
Major sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah, Nico Moon, the thing with him, too, is he started out, he was a songwriter for a Zac Brown Band.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. He went by a different name. I can't tell you what it was, but I remember when his song Good Time was on country radio, and that song was, that like epitomizes everything I hate about modern country right there. It's just, I hate the fact that Nashville has this like, and I'm telling you now, somebody who listens to a ton of country radio, I feel like it's going away into some degree. Like there was a period of time from like the bro country era and then into like 2019 where like Nashville had this raging inferiority complex to LA and Hollywood. And it was never more apparent than the type of music that was being played and the type of instrumentation that was being incorporated. The snap tracks, the claps, the drum tracks, the drum machines. I remember, good stud still story. I remember during an air check, I told Cole I was going to send him a video of this big long video essay critiquing why all country songs sound the same. And I sent it to him and he watched it. And I remember Cole telling me then every time, like for the next week, he goes, thanks, Stove. Now I hate everything I hear. And I'm like, I got to sit in the studio here for 7 hours a day. So like I said, I know all the words to songs I hate.
That's about as good a compliment you're going to get out of Cole. That's good.
No, so. Cole had the best stories. Always,
he did.
Always had the best stories. From the crazy Cole's days to just, he would tell us, he went through a phase when we were there in the early 2000s where he wouldn't drink water anymore because he felt like Diet Coke was filtered better than water. So
he hasn't wavered on that opinion.
Is
let me
he
tell
still
you.
Okay? I didn't talk to him last time I saw him there before the sale and stuff. We talked for a little bit, but yeah, I didn't ask about the Diet Coke thing, but yeah, that was his big thing. Like, I will not drink water. Diet Coke is actually filtered.
He told me I've gotten sick off of water, never got sick off of Diet Coke. And I'm like, who am I to argue?
And he would always, did he still, while you were there, did he have the big gulp or whatever, the big large Diet Coke from McDonald's that he would walk around the office?
Yeah,
with?
Yeah. He okay. would make his McDonald's runs and everything like that. And I mean, it just became, we all have our staples. Yeah. And it was always just fun to see.
So your time at Stud Stills, you're on Walls 102. I know you, did you start in, where did you start? What stations were you on? I know you ended up in mornings, but.
I was on Q Hit Music for a cup of coffee and a sweet roll. I was on Q Hit Music for probably like as a training ground middays, very briefly, like my first 2 months. And then I got bumped to Walls. I want to say October 18. That's when I got bumped out, which is where I kind of wanted to end up anyway. Mm-hmm. I did 3 to 7. I did afternoons. I did Stove Sizzling afternoons on Walls 102 for all those, all that time. And then, you know, we had some people leave. I threw my hat in the ring for the morning show on Walls. And then I teamed up with Danny. And then we were the Morning Sizzle with Stove and Danny starting in August of 2021.
Nice. So the name Stove, has that been a nickname that you've had for a long time, or was that something that was gifted to you from your time at Studstill Media?
It's been a nickname for several years, actually. It's really my closest. It's funny now, because before Studstill, it was my closest friends, like my 4 or 5 closest friends who referred to me as Stove. Now, when I go back to Peru now, like, that's what I'm known as. And it's kind of fun to be known like that. But that was a nickname, though, that carried over, though. It was once, you know, I learned very early on the culture of having nicknames for that conglomerate. I was like, yeah, that I didn't have to really think hard. It's like, I'll go by that. It's a fun mononym.
Did it come from
you're better off if you don't have one, then they assign you one, and that's never good because it's ridiculous. And there was a time where they just basically wanted you to have some sort of an animal name for the most part. So
was it bridesmaids?
What's that?
Was it bridesmaids, Steve? Was that how you got the Stove?
You know, it's funny. Everybody brings that up. It was not that, though. It was not. It had nothing to do with that. My nickname, my nick, and it's really corny and anticlimactic, but like how it came was, we were playing pool one night. Me and my buddies were playing billiards, and my one friend who never misses the opportunity to make the lamest joke on the planet. I was facing my good friend Mike and in pool, and Mike had this thing where he would go on a hot streak and like sink like 4 balls in a row, and then I'd be down and then I would lose. So he sunk like 3 or 4 balls in a row. And then my buddy Sam said, like, had to make the corniest line in the face of the earth. He said, like, man, Mike's getting hot. You ought to call him a microwave. Then my other friend Nick chimes in and says, well, if he's microwave, he's got to be Stove. And then that's how that stuck. Microwave didn't stick, but Stove stuck.
Stuck.
Stove is much better. So,
well,
speaking of movies, so you bring up Bridesmaids, JC, and you were an English major at North Central, but were you specifically wanting to be a writer, or was it? Because I saw something online about you about that Roger Ebert was a big inspiration for you. So, did you want to write movie reviews? Is that what you wanted to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Roger Ebert was probably the single greatest professional influence on me. I started reading his reviews back in, like, I want to say really young, probably about 6 years old, out of the Sun Times. My parents used to get the Sun Times and the Tribune, so I had the best of both worlds. And then when I was growing up, it was I never watched really Siskel and Ebert on TV. I watched it more obviously in reruns and YouTube clips, but sure, I watched fairly religiously Ebert and Roper for many years. And I was always fascinated by movies, and I have an uncle that put me onto a lot of different movies. I mean, I'm an only child too, so that, and I suck at sports. So my parents were like, yeah, if he just wants to sit inside and watch movies, that's a cheap alternative to sports. So then and my mother was a nurse. My mother was a trauma nurse too growing up. So she was like, you can't have a BB gun. 8-year-old Steve can't have a BB gun, but he can watch Clerks. That's totally fine. and that's really how it started. And then I started writing reviews in 2009. And then, built this, me and my good friend Andrew built this beautiful website for me in 2021, and sort of the rest is history.
So how do you afford to go out and have fun considering you work in radio and on the side you write movie reviews?
Well, I will say AMC Stubs makes it very equitable, makes it definitely very affordable. The AMC Stubs A-List program is very good. I'm also privileged enough to, in not as much as I would like, and still living in Dubuque, it's better than Peru in the regard of your access to screenings, but it's still not completely great. But I've built up a decent sort of Rolodex, if you will, of different press contacts and stuff. So I have been able to get digital screeners and whatnot. So that's been good. And then it's ultimately now with streaming services too, there's always something to watch. There's always something to review. I mean, scrolling through my website, you see, I don't just stick to, you know, it's a lot of new movies, but I go back, obviously. I go back, you know, as far back as time in memoriam, 1920, 1930 to review some movies. Just did the Evil Dead series, obviously, with the release of the new film.
How dare you give Army of Darkness 2.5 stars? How dare you?
I knew that was
my boomstick. Come on, man.
I knew this was coming. It's not a harsh 2.5 stars. It wasn't without its merits. I enjoyed, I would say, the first maybe 45, 50 minutes of it.
Had you watched?
What is there, like 72 total, I think?
Yeah.
It's really short. It's really short.
And I, you know, it's stupid because, like, Army of Darkness was my entry point into Evil Dead. So it's hard for me to, like, be harsh on that movie because that's my entry point, you know? So, because we were junior high kids when that came out. So, like, I remember the previews for it, and I remember how excited I was, and the skeleton army. So, and
we'll
then also,
this is the perfect story for how much I love Army of Darkness. Okay, I worked at a video store. The movie Clerks almost materialized as my life because I worked at a video store. I shit you not, I would lock the door and walk down, the little strip mall to the White Hen Pantry to go buy myself a soda and a bag of chips. So it was literally like Clerks, okay? But I worked at a shitty video store, just like Randall did, because right next to us was the Big Choice. Blockbuster Video literally opened in the parking lot directly next door. And we did not have a copy of Army of Darkness. People would try to come in and rent it. We didn't have one. So I went and I bought a previously viewed copy of Army of Darkness for myself from Blockbuster, even though I worked directly next door at Video City. So...
How long did Video City last post a Blockbuster opening?
You know, there was a number of people that still tried the best to continue to use us. I don't remember how long they lasted. I think they actually still have a name piece still up on the strip mall there on 104th and Cicero. I think that's still there.
I was just going to ask, where was it at? Where was the neighborhood?
It was in Oaklawn. So
okay,
but yeah, we managed to last for a while, but trying to get them to get a number of copies of movies was never something they did very well at, to put it that way.
I never did my time at a video store, unfortunately. My father actually runs a liquor store back home. That's where that was my first actual job in college, and working with him at the liquor store. So I never really did get to put my time in the video store, unfortunately. But that would have been a dream job for me. And I remember like watching Clerks at a very young age, just thinking like, man, if me and my best friend did this is peak life right here.
We have a lot of similarities in our story. I mean, besides North Central College alums, only child, I wanted to be a film critic when I went to college, and I ended up at North Central because I could not find a decent newspaper or any type of program anywhere around the area. And I wasn't going to afford U of I where, you know, Ebert went. And I remember as a kid, I didn't like Roger Ebert because when I was a kid, Ebert was still a little more vicious with his reviews. I think he softened as he got older, I think. He was a little more tolerable of more, popular fare, I would say, the older he got. But I used to keep my own little tab at home on a sheet of paper of all the movies that I recorded on the SLP speed or the EP speed. For those of you old enough to remember VHS, and I would give it my star rating and everything else and all that stuff. But I have grown to, look back and think very fondly of Roger Ebert as a very pivotal and important role. Yes. In my life as well.
I will chime in and say, you will love the site. I'll send it to you guys. It's I found it years ago. I can't believe it's still active, so considering it's a blog spot. There's a website. It's called rogerswurst.blogspot.com. Okay. And it is a collection. I want to say there's, I think, 79 movies on there. It's rogerswurst.blogspot.com. And it's a collection of reviews from this guy who critiques what Roger Ebert gave a movie. And it's like Roger's rating what the movie should have been rated and just lambasting, affectionately, but lambasting his opinions on it. There's Speed 2 on there. There's Geely, because he was famously one of the few critics who gave Geely a half positive review. Godfather Part 2 is the number one, because he only gave it 3 out of 4. Cop and a Half, Caddyshack, he only gave 2.5. It's a great site. Yeah. Roger actually tweeted about it, too. Ebert tweeted about it and said, and when he posted the link years and years ago, he tweeted it, and I remember the tweet. He said, I hate to admit it, but he has a point on some of these.
I'm like pretty sure he gave The Usual Suspects like a half a star, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's go here. Let's see what he said. 1.5
stars. 1.5. I was close. Yeah, I remember him not liking that for some reason.
So. It's a great site, I'm telling you. Like Gladiator's another one I know that's on there. Blade Runner's got to be on there too. It's a cool site. I think you'd have a lot of fun with it. And of course, the header is a tribute to the fact that Ebert gave Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle a favorable review too.
I think I actually saw that in the theater, I think, believe it or not.
That's possible.
He liked both. I remember I was watching with my girlfriend too, because I've turned her on to Siskel and Ebert. We were watching, it was Ebert and Roper. They reviewed Garfield and Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, the Bill Murray voice Garfield. Yeah. And Ebert liked both of them. And after Roper gave a scathing review of Garfield too, Ebert, in just because by this point it was like about maybe I think a year before he lost the ability to eat and talk, he was very soft and he gave it a thumbs up. And he goes, kids, Do not listen to Richard. He is too old. Listen to your Uncle Roger over here and see Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Wow. So is it Kevin Smith, is he like your end all be all? The Clerks had that much of an impression on you?
Absolutely. Now here's the thing. I'm not going to sit here and say Kevin Smith's the greatest filmmaker of all time. I'm not going to sit here and say that.
Okay,
because you've seen Yoga Hosers.
Yes, indeed, I have sat through Yoga Hosers. Here's the thing. I'm not going to put Kevin Smith on a pedestal for every other film critic to live up to. It's the same reason I don't love saying like X is the best movie ever made. The reason Clerks, one of millions of reasons that Clerks means a lot to me, and the movies of Kevin Smith mean a lot to me, especially the View Askew, the first 4 or 5 View Askew movies, is really at the essence of it is just because as a young kid, even though I might not have like completely understood, 8-year-old Steve did not completely understand the terminology of snowballing and a bunch of other different things. It was the fact that a movie could be about two people working dead end jobs on their days off, and the movie could be them having a conversation, a very authentic, admittedly nerdy, you know, down to earth life, a lot of life conversations. And I think that's what those movies taught me, was that these hangout movies, that movies could come in all shapes and sizes. Clerks was famously, I think, $27,000 it cost to make.
It was pretty cheap. Yeah.
So much smaller, you know, than anything I had seen at the time. And I don't know. Also, too, having like my own tight-knit group of friends and growing up with them, the run-ins, the chance run-ins of like the random customers that then come back in Mall Rats and Chasing Amy, or the sister of the sister in Chasing Amy, the sister of Alyssa is a character in Clerks. It all comes back around, like just that whole kind of anthology. It really taught me a lot about like sort of interconnectedness and just the simplicities that could ultimately make a movie.
Yeah, we were big fans. JC was as well. I think JC probably became a bigger Kevin Smith fan than me at one point. But you were really like, I'm trying to remember because I did read a couple of your reviews today. You were pretty emotional about Clerks 3, right?
And I'm gonna chime in here real quick because I love Kevin Smith, and Red State I think is one of the coolest things he's ever done. Is that Red State? Was that what it was called?
You got it.
Amazing. I watched this Jay and Silent Bob reboot, and then I said, I'm done. Like, it was like Yoga Hosers, Genocidal Barbarito. I'm like, I'm not watching anymore because it's, I think Kevin Smith has just gotten too much about Kevin Smith and making sure his daughter has a job. And then I watched Clerks 3 and I completely empathize with you on this. So that's, I just want to set you up for that.
No, that's fine. No, and I can't blame you. I hate it. Yoga Hosers, I hate it. I detested that movie. And Jay and Silent Bob Reboot sucked. I'll be the first to admit it. I remember when the Clerks 3 trailer dropped, I was immediately disappointed because you know that Clerks 3 is now the fourth movie in Kevin Smith's repertoire that is about making a movie.
Yes.
It's the fourth movie. You had Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Zach and Miri Make a Porno, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and now you have Clerks 3. Like, it's the most overused crutch of his is a movie about making a movie. And I'll add this too with Clerks about you, Shap, saying it made me very emotional, which is true about Clerks 3. It is without a doubt the shittiest movie to ever make me cry, as much as it did.
That makes me feel a little bit better now. So
the shittiest movie to ever make me cry, because it is deeply flawed. Yeah. It is a deeply flawed movie, but it is the rare comedy, and I mean rare comedy, because off the cuff, I can't think of another comedy that, like, the humor is very inconsistent and not wildly successful, but it's the pathos that lands in that movie that really hits home about aging and death and everything like that, and like friendship and like, you know, you know settling scores in a way and trying to leave a legacy. It's the pathos of that movie that pays off dividends, whereas the comedy, I think like the first 20 and the last 20 minutes of that movie are great, and it's the midsection of them making the movie that is ultimately the least interesting.
I enjoyed it. I told him I JC had texted me something about it, saying that it was fantastic. I said, now that's a stretch. I said, it was fine, but fantastic is, that's a stretch.
Well, I wasn't,
it wasn't fantastic. Well, here's, now, it was good enough for me to get all the way through it. It's better, which is better than, you know, some of the other ones.
So my wife and I watched it cause she enjoyed the Clerks stuff too. And the Kevin Smith, we went and saw Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes do their podcast live in Watseka, Illinois.
That's cool.
Like on one of our anniversaries, it was hilarious. We stayed the night at a Super 8, did a whole night and like date night for the two of us out of town in a little tiny little town called Watseka, and saw Kevin and Jason there and watched them film their podcast live, their Growing Old podcast. And so I had I'd really gone all out, loved him. And then, you know, a couple of those movies came out and I just kind of fell off the thing. So I wasn't even planning on watching Clerks 3, and Heidi's like, let's sit down and watch it. So we watched it and I bawled because I wasn't expecting it. I think that was the thing. I wasn't expecting it to take the turn that it did with what he did. And it gutted me. And I think, you know, like you said, it probably wasn't a great movie, but like that unexpected layer that he threw in there, like was, which made me make it a fantastic movie. You know, that's why I text you. This was actually pretty good. So I probably I set the bar too high for Shap when he watched it, because if I would have kept the bar lower, it probably would have been better for you.
It was fine. Like I said, it was fine. I just calling it a fantastic movie, that's a stretch. It may have you, you know, hit you where it gets you the feels and everything else and gets you a little emotional. But all I could think about while we're talking about this is that if Kevin Smith happens to stumble upon this podcast, he's going to make a movie about people going to see his live podcast. So it'll be a podcast about a movie making a podcast in the movie. And then, you know, he'll just continue on with it. So
I'll add to like with Clerks 3, I think the other thing that like underscores that as well, and most of Kevin Smith movies have this going for them ultimately, but I think all three Clerks movies, I think all three have outstanding soundtracks, and the third one didn't get an OST, unfortunately, but there are playlists you can find. I think the soundtrack for that movie is great, and then it ends with that phenomenal John Gorka song, I'm From New Jersey, which might be, I know Soul Asylum did the credits for the previous two Clerks movies. They did Can't Even Tell for the first one. They did Misery for Clerks 2. But going with that John Gorka I'm From New Jersey ballad, it's so perfect because it's a somber, reflective sort of song. And then it throws you a line, and I didn't really catch it until the second time I saw Clerks 3, but it throws you that line where he says, I'm from New Jersey, it's like Ohio, but even more so, imagine that. And I think that encapsulates that movie supremely well, especially after that emotional gut punch of a climax.
I'm just still shocked you watched it twice.
I've seen it three times, actually.
Three?
I've seen it three times, and my dad, who can't stand movies, much less Clerks movies. I remember telling him about Clerks 3, and I told him, he was like, you went and saw that shit movie, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah. I said, I actually cried to it. It actually got me very emotional. And he goes, I'd cry too if I spent money on that shit.
So, did you see the news today of the movie that they're bringing back for a sequel? It's not Kevin Smith. It's unfortunately so. I read today at Entertainment Weekly that they're making a sequel to Sylvester Stallone's 1993 film Cliffhanger. They're making a Cliffhanger 2 with Stallone reprising his role and character, apparently.
I thought you were going to go the Gladiator angle. I thought you were going to actually go the Gladiator sequel that they've been talking about.
Oh, are they talking about that too?
Yeah, they have. I think who was attached to it? I want to say Pedro Pascal. That's who it was.
Okay.
Pedro Pascal from Last of Us. He was attached to it. Didn't know too much about Cliffhanger, though, the sequel. And nobody asked for it, but Hollywood will give it to us anyway. So
Have you seen the original Cliffhanger?
I've not, truthfully. It's one of the Stallone movies I've missed.
Oh, you see, now you're going to have to go watch that just simply so you can. There's some pretty bad dialogue in it.
It's awful.
There's some cool stunts, but John Lithgow basically created his Dexter character on the cliffs of that film, basically. Between that and I think there was a movie called Ricochet with Denzel Washington in the 90s as well.
Oh, Ricochet. That one's good.
Yeah, where Lithgow just goes all in on the absolute crazy, just psychotic villain. So,
you know what Stallone movie I just saw for the first time? Cobra. Was it Cobra? No.
Yes.
Yeah. Where he's the cop and he eats the pizza weird.
But he cuts it with a pair of scissors. Yeah. He cuts a slice of pizza with a pair of scissors.
I remember that. It's been years since I've seen that. But now you mentioning that, I do recall that pizza scene.
Yeah.
That's all I remember from it. It's like, that's weird. That's, who does that?
My mom just messaged me because she actually, for her, they have a little summer place where I guess they thought they weren't going to pay for TV to watch. So they bought a bunch of like DVDs, dirt cheap at Big Lots or something. And that was one of them they had. And I took it the one day because I'm like, oh, I haven't seen this movie in ages. So I'm going to take it and watch it. She just was like going crazy trying to find the DVD copy of Cobra. Where is it at, Jonathan? You took it. Where is it? I'm like, I brought it back, Mom. It's there. You can watch your dirtbag scene from the beginning. It's fine. It's totally fine. So
I'm still blown away because somebody found an article that Cobra is exactly what Stallone wanted to do with Beverly Hills Cop. Was that you?
That was me.
That was me.
I found that. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that was Stallone was first pitched Beverly Hills Cop, and he wanted his idea for that movie was basically what turned into Cobra. And wisely, Paramount said, yeah, I think we're going to go a different direction with this. So
I also think saying that like Sylvester Stallone was good or not that anybody said it, but I just had this off the top of my head to bring this conversation full circle. If anybody says Stallone was great or good in Cobra is probably the equivalent of saying Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
I will give Stallone credit. I thought his work in the Creed reboot, in the first Creed,
yes,
was fantastic. So, and I thought his nomination was warranted for that. I still haven't seen Creed 3 yet, and now the whole Jonathan Majors thing kind of sours me wanting to see it even more. So, which I guess you shouldn't, you know, innocent till proven guilty, but it seems like the writing's on the wall for him right now in his career.
Am I the only one that didn't? Did you see Creed 3, Steve? Because I did not like it. I didn't. I watched it and
really?
I thought it was formulaic and
Rocky movies
they
formulaic?
Are,
I mean, that's what they are.
I liked the first two, but the last one just kind of fell flat for me.
See, I liked Creed 3 quite a bit, and I won't obviously divulge into spoiler territories because, yeah. Shap, you haven't seen it, and two,
no,
it's still a relatively new movie. Although it's a Rocky-centric movie, I don't think it doesn't take a student of Nolan to figure it out. But Creed 3, though, is I think that the first thing I really liked about it, all due respect to Stallone and Rocky, Adonis is no longer under the thumb of Rocky anymore. This story is totally on him. He doesn't really have to share the limelight with like a second lead. You have Jonathan Majors, who's the antagonist in the film. On top of that, too, I think that it's also Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut, too.
Yeah.
And I think that Jordan really distilled down what makes these movies really good in terms of the establishing the stakes, the setup very early in the movie. The economy that he uses, I think, is good. Establishes the stakes very early, gets the plot moving, maybe doesn't develop things quite as much as you maybe like in terms of like the nuances of situations. But I think the movie moves in under 2 hours with him behind the camera and leading it. And I also think that Majors and Jordan at the end of the day, I think them as co-leads are very good. And seeing that friendship slowly dilute into something darker and more sinister was really compelling stuff. I liked it. It's hard for me to rank the recent Creed movies. I find all of them good to very good, but I would have to put Creed 3 probably in close ties with the first two, because I thought Creed 3 was a very solid sequel overall. And it really does suck about Majors, though. It really does sour some of the excitement about that movie.
Are you completely tired of anything that's comic book related at this point as a moviegoer?
Oh, God, yeah, I've been tired. I've been tired for a while now. I'm at the point now, it was like Avengers Endgame. When Avengers Endgame came out, after I saw Avengers Endgame, it was almost like an emancipation. And it was like, as good as it was, I was just like, all right, now I don't really feel like bound by my own like chosen path to have to watch all of these movies. I've skipped so many comic book movies recently. I'll see Guardians 3 because I've really been a fan of the series, but I'll be honest, there's been a lot that I have missed over the last maybe year and a half, because at the end of the day now, these movies now are so tethered to the Disney Plus shows that you need to watch these shows in order to get the full scope of the plot. And I have a full-time job over here, and there's a lot other things to watch in the world besides Marvel branded content. So I've really taken sort of a backseat to superhero movies, aside from just a select assortment of ones that I want to see, such as Guardians 3. Like, I blew off Shazam 2. I blew off Eternals. There's a lot of which, and I still sleep nights having not seen them.
Even though you're sleepless with Steve and you sleep nights. How about that?
Exactly. I'm sleepless for other reasons, not that one.
Yeah.
Not those.
So I want to pull it back to radio for a second, because I did have an insider tell me that apparently there was something that happened at Studstill Media with you involving a dumpster.
It wasn't at Studstill Media. It wasn't at Studstill. It was during my time in La Salle, Peru.
Okay.
It was during my time in La Salle, Peru. Oh, Jesus. Charles is laughing now. He got me in this one.
I saw this post today. Go on.
You saw the essay on my website.
Yes,
okay.
I read the essay, yes.
The essay was called Low Points in La Salle. I spelled out LaySalle.
I love that.
It's under the essays tab. I'll probably towards the bottom, I would think. A lot of my musings there.
Are you saying you don't care for people pronouncing it LaSalle?
No. I was very kind in my writing. I took that. I don't think I can technically say LaSalle since I'm not from there, you know, and I think that's really a native thing. But yeah, that's my back alley dumpster back in the apartment that I lived at in LaSalle. And it was a situation where I bought something that I thought I needed, but I didn't need. And it was cheap too. So it was like $2.50 or so. It was at the Dollar General right down the road. And I threw it away in the dumpster. Like, I took it out of the couple things out of the package and I threw it away after I got out of my car, went upstairs. I'm like, shit, why did I buy this? I have this. I'm going to go return it. Shit, I threw the bag and the receipt in the dumpster. Just go fetch it. That's no big deal. So you can see, and that's why I included this photo, because this photo contextualizes everything. This dumpster sits on gravel. It does not sit on asphalt, and it's got wheels on it, okay? So any normal person would have thought that this would not have been a very intelligent idea. But long story short, I tried to reach back in and grab the CD and or grab the receipt in the bag. Dumpster topples over on top of me. And all I'm going to say is it fucking rained that week. So that was a baptism like no other. And it pinned my leg down, actually, like the metal bar you can see on the top of that dumpster where it catches the lid. It pins my leg down. And again, it's on gravel. So you're like buried. My leg's like buried into the gravel with this thing on top of me. And I could not get it off for the life of me. And I was literally about 5 seconds away from screaming because I'm like, I can't get, I'm at an angle too. I'm like laying down. I can't lift this thing off of me. So I finally do it. I finally get it off of me miraculously. I only sacrificed a shoe and like the reverse coyote thing. I go up and I throw my clothes away. I shower and everything. And I go to work. And the next day, this was like the first 3 months of living out there. It was like October of 18. The next day, I actually had to call into work. I could not move. My leg was like the color of a Carolina Panthers jersey, which I think is a line in the story. I could yes. not move. It was black and blue. It was swollen like a baseball. It was terrible. It was excruciating pain. And I remember telling my mother, my mother was a nurse. I remember telling my mother and like the horror of her reaction was like, I knew we shouldn't have let him move on his own.
I mean, looking at that dumpster, you wouldn't think it would tip over. You'd think it'd be heavy enough, but I guess empty, maybe you wiggle it just right. So.
Yeah, man, it was terrible, man. And I mean, like it was, the fact that it rained and then like, I mean, bad enough that the thing falls on top of me, but it's like then to get like the, for lack of a better term, the juices, like it was wretched, man.
Just
I mean,
look at the mileage you've got out of this though. I mean, that's a well-used story you have. So,
yeah, I was going to say, and I tried very unsubtly to emulate the stylings of Charles Bukowski too. So there's that as well.
Nice. Yeah,
and I never did get the refund either. Never did retrieve the receipt.
I want to do a study on political candidates in LaSalle County who pronounce it LaSalle, because I honestly think that the people that pronounce it on their radio ads or in interviews or you know in town hall meetings or even debates that say LaSalle, I have this sick, awful feeling that people that pronounce it that way win. I really do. But it drives me up the fucking wall when I hear that. Another person, Andrew, is on our text on the live chat online saying LaSalle, cringe.
Cringe.
So
yeah.
I know it bothers other people. It bothers the shit out of me. Just like when I hear Illinois as opposed to Illinois,
yeah.
Bothers the shit out of me.
You know what that was like, irritating.
You know what used to drive me crazy?
God, there's so many people that do it, though.
What would drive me crazy when I would do birthdays, like even on the days of GLC or even doing it on LPO and AJK, is the amount of people who would call in and they'd be like, hey, so-and-so is celebrating. And they would say, yeah, they're from Peru, Illinois. And I don't know why, but I remember when I was on GLC, it would drive me crazy because I'm like, where else are they picking up this damn radio station? Because at the time, there was no streaming. So it was like when they called in the birthday, it was like, yeah, we're in Mendota. It's cool. Just say Mendota. It's fine. We know you're in Illinois. I don't know why that would drive me bonkers, but like when they would say Illinois behind the cities, I don't know. That's one of my
This might be a good way to wrap this up here. Yeah. Speaking of pronunciations and names.
Yeah.
Pronounce your last name for us, Steve.
Pulaski.
All right. Thank you. You hear all that, Illinois Valley people? It's not Pulaski. It's Pulaski.
Oh, because you have the park in LaSalle, which was like a block and a half away from where I lived. You had Pulaski Street. Yeah. Everybody would like to say Pulaski. And
yes. Is that
I have the Chicago
it?
Accent, I'm fully aware, but it's Pulaski. Even people yes. in Iowa say Pulaski, and it like I'm
my,
like that.
My former co-host, you know, she grew up in Oglesby, and it's Pulaski Street to her. And then
seriously,
actually, we had a huge bit on the radio on this that it's Pulaski.
Oh,
like, no, you people are crazy. What's it named after? Kashmir Pulaski, right? And I said, how do you say Kashmir Pulaski's last name? And she would say Pulaski. So how is the street Pulaski? She's like, well, the street's Pulaski. I said, no, it's not Pulaski. It's not. So
yeah, Pulaski. That's how you say it.
Have you tried to order Ravs anywhere else besides here and get something that's you know, not a ravioli, but a tortellini?
I haven't tried that yet. I really haven't. I haven't had a pork tenderloin as good since I left the Illinois Valley. I'll say that. I miss Grandma Rosie's flows on Pulaski too. I will say, living in Dubuque, there's a lot of good restaurants out here, but man, even my friends, because a lot of my friends obviously would come down to Peru and stuff and spend a weekend with me and whatnot. We always talk about the places we miss in Peru, in Oglesby, in La Salle. Sam's Pizza in Oglesby, that was one we always hit. That place is at the Twilight Zone of pizza joints. there's that one. Camden, that was my bar. Yes. In La Salle. Camden was my bar. I was there pretty much every weekend. Like Grandma Rosie's, like I mentioned before, there's just so many great Palermo's pizza. There's the food options in IV were what really spoiled me, and I miss a lot of them dearly.
You find yourself
Zam from WGLC and other station fame asked if you told the story of your gas leak in your apartment.
The gas leak. Shit, I even forgot about that. It wasn't a total gas leak. The nozzle was a half size too big or something like that. No, I haven't told that. I'll briefly summarize it by saying that, like, I moved into the apartment across the hall, and they got a new stove in, and I guess it wasn't as tight around, like, the nozzle part of it wasn't as tight, so it had like this. I thought it was faint. This faint smell of stove gas. And I remember we went back to my house after we went drinking or whatever. We went out to eat and we were hanging out upstairs and whatnot. And Danny, who went on to be my co-host, she was pregnant. And she goes, "I smell stove gas. Stove, you need to get that checked out over here, because if my baby comes out with three arms, I'm going to be pissed." So I wound up having to. That was a whole to do though. But I do vividly remember that one though. So shout out to Kevin on that one too. That's another guy I dearly miss.
Yeah, another person who's moved on to greener pastures than radio. So it happens. It happens. Sometimes it happens faster for others, and then others, it you know, you can last for 20, 25 years or so. But and then you finally start saying, you know, maybe I should look elsewhere at this. So how many years in radio now for you, Steve?
It'll be five, professionally speaking.
Oh, you still got, you've got time.
Not going to long. Five in July. It'll be five in July.
And you're already like management or something, right?
Yeah, I'm the program director for Y105.
You're good.
There you go. You're doing good. You're doing good.
Going the right route.
I use the Martin Lawrence line from his comedy special Run Tell Dad. I'm gonna ride this motherfucker till the wheels fall off. It'll be a chain and sparks flying. I'm gonna ride it until the wheels fall off.
That's a good way to wrap this whole thing up, man. It has been a pleasure hanging out with you tonight. Check out Steve's website, Steve Pulaski, Pulaski.com. With Sleepless with Steve, you guys go live on Wednesday nights, right?
Wednesday, 6:30 Central Time. Yep.
And check
out. All right, cool. So check it out.
Yep. That's on YouTube. We'll put links and stuff up here when we put the podcast out tomorrow. But yeah, definitely enjoy you. And also, if you're in Dubuque, hanging out in Savannah, right? Because you can get it over the border, right? Right? Or not Savannah.
Yeah, you
Savannah,
can. Yeah, you Galena. Can. Galena, you mean?
Galena and Savannah, they're all right there. Right by, cause you're right on the Mississippi, aren't you?
Yeah. Right on the Mississippi. Like I said, I'm 15 minutes from Illinois. I'm 15 minutes from Wisconsin.
Nice.
Is it really hilly and stuff in Dubuque as well? Like,
oh God. Yeah. That's probably my only real complaint about Dubuque over here is that the terrain out here is murderous. It's all hills. It's unlike anything you've seen in the Midwest. Like it's really something to behold. There's a lot of high hills. It's called the Driftless area. It takes getting used to driving. I mean, I'd love to look up the – I love commenting on what you said earlier, Shap, about the LaSalle study you want to do. I'd love to do a study on, like, the ratio of brake line replacements in this area. Because, I mean, it is – I mean, it's like – this past winter over here when it snowed, it's like every time I went up or down a hill, it's like, "Hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville. Welcome to Jackass."
I hope you use that on the radio at least once. I would. But yeah, I took my wife to Galena for the first time a couple of years ago. I think it was 2021 maybe. And I was like, man, Illinois is always super duper flat, you know. So, but I'm like,
Galena's got the
cool
highest elevation points, and or Joe Davies County rather has the highest elevation points in all of Illinois, and it, I mean, it shows it. When you're coming on the Highway 20, when you're going into the Dubuque Bridge, you see it, man. You see the elevation. It is, it's beautiful. It really is. It sucks to drive, but it really is it's a really pretty area if you could take your eyes off the road for 3 seconds.
That's awesome.
Hey, all right, so Highway 20, make sure you're generous with the brake and be prepared to replace.
Yeah, right,
duly noted.
Hey, congratulations on all your success, man, and keep rocking it and broadcast and representing WONC so well. So appreciate you taking the time with us tonight.
Yeah,
I will do just that. Thank you both, JC Schapp. I really appreciate it.